welcome to the Hellbound Alley program. I'm Allie, and with me as always is Frank.
Yeah.
And that clickety-clacking you hear in the background is our good friend Aaron. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. No more clickety-clacking for me.
No more clickety-clack. So it is a nice day at the end of April.
And there's only 5 days left until the National Day of Reason. Well, it's not a national day here, but in
but don't let that stop you.
In the U.S., anyway.
Don't let that stop you from using reason just because it's not Reason Day.
Not the day.
I don't mind the idea of having one day where Christians pray, but if Christians don't have to have just one day to pray, they need one day to make everyone else pray, and that's why they call it the National Day of Prayer, which...
You mean of Reason.
Which is now called the National Day of Reason, just to one-up them.
No.
That's what I think.
It's just our day.
But it will be on... It will be on the 4th of May on 2006. And what do you do on the National Day of Reason in the United States?
Well, it's to celebrate reason and to raise public awareness about the threat to religious liberty posed by government intrusion.
Yeah, that's a good way of wording it, to make them think that we care about their religion. But for the most part, I'm sure most of the people behind the National Day of Reason probably do care about religious freedom, unlike most religious people. So you know, there we have secular people going in to fight for religious freedom, because that's the way to get to sympathy, I guess, for your cause.
Well, it kind of relates to our topic today. Because we're talking about a culture war, and that's the National Day of Prayer is dedicated to that purpose.
Yeah, it's a strike in the culture war, definitely.
It's more symbolic than anything. But
well, it's a big, it's supposed to be a big notice to all Americans who don't pray. I mean, what, the government wants to lead everyone in prayer? What's that about? Does that make any sense? I mean, why do people need the government to tell them when to pray? It just doesn't work for me.
Exactly.
But that's what prayer in school is all about.
Apparently people need newscasters to tell them that they can still pray.
Well, yeah, like Brian Williams last month. Who said, even though prayer can, looks like it may hurt cancer patients, or whatever that was, you can
keep
still pray.
Keep praying anyway and keep harming people. You know?
Of course, we know that prayer doesn't actually harm anyone.
Sure it does. See, it harms people and their expectations.
Oh, are you saying that maybe people who know they're being prayed for by groups of people feel stressed out or something?
I think
that they have to prove God by getting
better? I think that they probably expect more,
Oh.
I think that might lead to bad results. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I won't
because
believe it.
Because it's based on false hope.
I won't believe it until I see it on House.
It's based on false hope.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had religion on House.
They always have religion on House. They just did the thing about prayer on House just last week.
House come out ahead against the prayer guy?
Well, it was all Chase. And Chase was keeping score, and it was three House and three God or something like that.
And didn't House come out ahead against the prayer guy on that episode?
Another point for getting his friend Wilson to out-theologize the faith healer.
That's
I thought
right.
That was great.
I don't think House got Wilson to out-theologize
yeah, he did.
15-year-old.
He totally did.
But I mean, again, even though the 15-year-old was some big, like, preacher, it's not that hard to win a fight against a 15-year-old.
Oh, come on.
Woohoo!
In theology, against any believer, yeah.
Well, actually, you do have a good point there. because, you know, even if, I mean, the kid wasn't a theologian after all. He was a performer.
Well, I mean, every single believer thinks he's a theologian.
Yeah, well, I mean, until they, you get them to admit that they're not, they're just believers. But, you know, they will say, I read my Bible. But, you know, it's not that you read your Bible, it's that you keep your Bible near your bed at home. You know, if you have a Bible, it basically means that you read it, according to a lot of believers. But, you know, it's collecting dust. We know it. You might pick it up and take it to church with you, but it means nothing. Sorry, I'm kind of in a dark mood. I really need to get out into the sun. I was irritated yesterday.
You can get out in the sun.
I will be getting out in the sun. I've been watching these ducks.
I'm only going to read the same passages.
I want to see ducklings. But anyway, I was irritated enough to write a draft for a blog entry, a couple of pages here on my paper, about a friendly-esque exchange we had on the RJ show. And I felt almost like I was back in junior high school, where you're still dumb enough to actually believe that if you're, you know, a girl, you should act like you're dumb in order to make friends, and that being smart means that you're kind of ostracized from the rest of the kids. I felt like that because there was a lot of going off half-cocked about us, basically, that
half-cocked is the word.
We're intellectuals, therefore it means three things. And those three things are, we have little common sense, actually no common sense. We think we're better than everyone else.
Which is true.
And we don't live enjoyable lives. Or basically, we don't have lives.
And we do not have any solutions to propose to the problems that we talk about.
And, okay, let me talk about this elitism for a minute. Okay, yeah, I think I'm better than everybody else. But, you know, that mirror reflects both ways. Let me tell you, when you're going to talk about how you're the common man, and you're like all of you out there in radio land where you have common sense and you're the salt of the earth and you live an enjoyable life, you too think you're better. It's like this reverse humility where I'm so humble because I'm not super intellectual, but I do, you know, that's also like a projection of elitism. Mm-hmm. It's like sort of a reverse elitism. But I have to say, now, I'm not interested in talking about other people that much, but it doesn't make any sense unless I mention it. But I'm very proud of having lived a very enjoyable life, and it's not even half done yet. And I've done a lot of stuff, and I've gotten into a lot of trouble.
But now that you're married, that's the end of that.
Yeah, right. but I'm almost 40, and I just got married like 2 years ago. But I've gotten into a lot of trouble. I've done a lot of stupid stuff. I've done a lot of really amazing stuff, and I've met a lot of really amazing people, both scary and great. And I've done sports to performing, and I've been all kinds of different ideologies and political ideas and religious beliefs. I've gone through a lot of those things, and I'm going to write about them. And if it sounds like bragging, it is, because I feel like I do have a lot to brag about, at least to myself, because I've often said to myself, if I died, it wouldn't be that bad, because I don't think I'd really miss out. But on the other hand, I have another half of a life to go. Who knows what more I can experience after all the things that I've experienced so far. But for all the things I have done, what I haven't done, Frank has probably done. Frank doesn't think that he's done that much, but as a matter of fact, he has.
Anyway.
So I'm saying that thinking, being a person who likes to talk about ideas does not preclude them from living an interesting life and enjoying themselves. And after all of the things I've done, I've come out with the feeling that it's not the big exciting roller coaster ride anyway that matters. It's being able to appreciate smaller parts of that life. Because otherwise you're going to end up craving all of those exciting moments to the detriment of all of the really important little things that make up a life. So as far as that goes, in your face, because I may be only 39, but I've had enough going on in my life to satisfy me.
And, how about you, Aaron? Do you agree with American Heathen that we intellectuals, yeah, he wants a trademark now. Fuck you, RJ. You can stuff it. But do you agree with American Heathen that we intellectuals have no life to speak of and we have no solutions to propose to the common man? Or do you think that the guy's full of shit?
I think he's totally full of shit. He's trying to figure out the stereotype, his wholesome concept,
No, I totally disagree with that. I think he's totally full of shit and just trying to make a stereotype and pigeonhole some concept like intellectualism into a lifeless stereotype or some sort of lazy intellectuals that just sit around all day. That's totally absurd. I think we all stand as examples of that. I totally contradict his little...
And
his
they
theory,
wanted to go on a rant,
yeah,
which is part of his show. I don't begrudge him
his little argument.
Do on radio shows.
I was just saying it's because he was saying how extremism is evil, blah, blah, blah. So I said he was a fucking molly toddler, and then he said that I was an intellectual, blah, blah, blah. I have no relation to life. He thinks he knows about life. I got to tell you, Aaron and Allie have probably done more drugs than...
It's not that's about
probably
doing
done more
drugs.
Subtotal of drugs than RG will ever see on TV.
I've done more than drugs.
Seriously,
guys,
you have been into a lot of stuff.
I've been into a lot. It's not just about the drugs, obviously. I've also done torrid love affairs. I've done abuse. I've done all kinds of terrible and wonderful people. I've done sports, I've done music, I've done, but yeah, a lot of people, they do need to see what drugs are about, or else eventually I would have figured out what drugs were about. Unfortunately, I couldn't have avoided it, but I'm glad I know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do drugs except for, caffeine, but I'm not against them, but it's something I would have eventually done anyway. But it doesn't matter. You don't have to have done drugs per se to have done all kinds of interesting things in your life. But
I'm very work hard, play hard. I'm very active. I'm very active socially in all kinds of ways, and also professionally, and I have a whole bunch of
companies. Yeah. I'm very work hard, play hard. I'm very active intellectually. I'm very active socially, in all kinds of ways, and also professionally.
Well,
and I have a whole bunch of different hobbies. Like all these intellectual people, I think, are even more active than the average Joe Schmo idiot that's going to sit there and absorb light from his television station for 8 hours a day.
To try out things. And you're curious and a little bit adventurous, and I feel like I've been quite adventurous myself. And I don't know what RJ has done in his life. I'm sure he's done plenty of things. But to say, if you're an intellectual and you're interested in ideas means that you're not going to do anything, it's just dumb. It's just retarded.
Well, anyway.
And he should take it back, personally.
I think we've talked enough on this topic. I'll just have to say, if people don't think we have any solutions to propose, they should listen to our shows. Because,
what we do...
A lot of what we talk about is about solutions.
Lately, we get together with people on Skype. Frank really likes to do this, and it's cool that we talk to people from so many parts of the world. With Skype lets you do that. But lately it's all been about solutions. Almost exclusively about solutions. We've been talking anarchy, and basically the topic has been about arbitration and actually how it could work in the world and how it has
worked. Well, it does work right now in
right
private
now
systems.
In the world.
International business has all sorts of private arbitration. Sports has them. I mean, it exists in many different domains.
And I feel like the things we've been talking about on our show are not of course, we're not idealists. We don't talk about ghosts floating around behind people's heads. When we talk about moral realism, we are talking about solutions. We are talking about real things. We're not people sitting around scratching our asses, complaining about other people. We are talking about how things can work. And at the same time, going out and doing them. I mean, for me, what I've done in the last 5 years is bigger than a lot of other things I've done, meaning picking up, leaving everything behind and coming out here 3,500-some miles away from where I've been doing all my other things, in a place where I don't speak the language, in a different country. It's definitely not just sitting around and, shitting diarrhea out my mouth, so. Nice image, eh?
Our topic today is the culture war. Just a little survey to get started. Ask whether they would disapprove of a child's wish to marry an atheist. 97.6% of Americans said yes. When asked which groups do not share their vision of American society, 39.5% chose atheists. So, atheists are the most discriminated group in the United States right now, even much higher than Muslims, actually, and homosexuals. So, I think this this is a good start, I guess, to talk about our topic, which is the culture war that's going on right now. I think our point of introduction as atheists is religious intolerance. But I think that the topic is much more extended than that. I think that atheists, I guess, are the first ones to realize that, I think, as an atheist, because we are pretty much the opposites. We're on the opposite side of the religious spectrum. And we are very disrespected. But I think it extends much further than that. I don't think religious people are that interested in fighting atheism per se.
They're just interested in saying it when people ask them in polls.
I think that the culture war is more fundamental than that. It has been going on ever since industrialization. It's basically a fight between modern values, between progressive values, scientific, to a certain extent, liberal, to a certain extent, modern values versus religious traditional values. Did you want to say something? I would say
people would hate other people.
Don't you think it's been going on longer since the Industrial Revolution?
I'm talking specifically about
culture wars. People would hate other people and wrap themselves around cultural identities and despise other cultures. You know, since before,
industrialization and the creation of cities.
A culture war.
You can talk about city values versus rural values. There's obviously a clear demarcation in politics, at least, between the concept of the city and the concept of the country. And I think this is explainable because of the, and this has existed forever. I mean, for example, the rise of science, as you may know, actually started on an island called Ionia, which was a very multicultural, I don't like that word, a very multicultural area, which was kind of on the outskirts of Greece. There was not as much cultural grip on that. There was a lot of different cultures, and the science had a brief emergence there, but it was then suppressed by the pagan religion and the slavery, the idea of slavery at that time. But yeah, the difference between the city and the rural area has always existed. But what happens with industrialization and with transport, what I think happens is you have really an amplification of that effect, which I think would be one area. And then you get, with that comes other things, such as the atheism being more widespread.
Mm.
Because when you have a multiculturalism, when you have different people from all sorts of areas, what happens is it's like a child being taught different religions. Most of the time he becomes an atheist.
Yeah.
It's kind of a process that comes naturally. Because you realize that there's all these religions and they're not really, they contradict each other and they're not really, they kind of all have the same belief.
Yeah.
Epistemic system, which is to say they don't really have
any.
They're all pretty much based on the same things. So I would say that's the other thing. And I think modern values, I think that's probably a big part of it. And so today we have also the notion of civil rights and that sort of thing, what we call modern liberalism. And in the U.S. anyway, we have a strong dichotomy between liberalism and conservatism, which does not necessarily exist in Europe. In Europe, religion, Christianity, is more associated with social justice, etc. So it's very different. But, yeah.
Well, what got people talking about the culture wars was probably the election in the United States with the whole blue state, red state thing. They see that half the country wants Bush and half the country wants Kerry. They call it a culture war. When I don't think that really has anything to do with it per se.
True.
But they identify the problem, the difference between Bush and Kerry as an election about moral values.
True.
Back then we identified the fact that none of those issues were moral values. It wasn't about morality.
There's no difference, really.
Basically, it was the people who hate the queers against the people who don't. And that doesn't exactly make a whole culture war exactly.
Right.
But, you know, is it the queers? Is it the gay people? Is it all about that? I mean, obviously, what I'm seeing is a country very slowly progressing. And I'm seeing a religious faction pushing their heels into the ground and saying, no, 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 it's too fast, it's too much. And but it's just too late.
Mm-hmm.
It already happened. I mean, that kind of thing already happened. It's too late for them. There's already acceptance of homosexuality. People just don't care. And you know, there's enough people who are willing to vote for Bush. But as long as the gas prices are high, this culture war thing isn't as sharply divided as people thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
People are voting for Bush if if gas prices are low.
I don't think it really has anything to do, per se, about a Bush versus Kerry.
Oh, of course not.
I think in terms of politics...
It's just what the media said it was, so people think it was.
Yeah. I think in terms of politics, at least in the U.S., it has to do more with this notion of social justice versus different versions of social justice. I think you've got a liberal notion of justice and a conservative concept of justice that basically oppose each other. I think that's more the fundamental issue about that.
Well,
but it's more ideological than actually expressed in the political.
Well, what I see, on television, which doesn't really matter to me, but is a fight between groups of people who want to tell us what to do.
Exactly.
It's a fight between two groups of people who want to impose certain things on all of us.
Exactly.
And as far as solutions go, I think people should be able to live the way they want to and not impose, if you want to be away from homosexuals, you've got
a
long road ahead. But I guess you can go ahead and try. But that, solution is not to say gays can't marry. I mean, it seems two sides are both worried about slippery slope.
I think the fundamental issue is one of egalitarianism versus religious or pseudo-religious categories. There are people who just want to level out society. And I think some libertarians are included in that category.
Yeah.
Who promote civil liberties because they help level out society, not because of any inherent merit of civil liberties. I don't think there are a lot of people out there who really want civil liberties at all costs. I think people want civil liberties because their agenda of egalitarianism is being held by them. And there are other people who promote nationalism, and more the religious side is more into nationalism and patriotism and militarism.
I think it's a lot what you said before. There's the cultural or against modern values, and there's people that are open to the progression of cultural values and ideas, of what's right or wrong.
I think it's a lot what you said before. There's the cultural or against modern values, and there's people that are open to the progression of cultural values and ideas of what is right or wrong and all these changes, and then there's people that are not, that want to keep it the way they want it, the way that they're used to. So there's a tug of war between people that want to change or let society change and go with the flow and people that want to fight it.
Well, the way they see it,
so then you have the group of people that are going to go with the flow of change and be all, like, voluntary acting, and then you got the people that want to prevent the change and act coercively to stop it.
They may share many values with modernity that we're not in favor of all modern values.
Hmm.
I think we have to be careful not to think that we're on one side.
Right.
Because obviously, for example, we have been fighting against relativism, and I think relativism is definitely a modern value. We're definitely
relativism itself is a value?
Which comes, I think comes mainly from multiculturalism, which is a great thing to a certain extent, but can also make people believe that all cultures are equally valid in the same way that all religions are equally valid.
That cultures are great and must be protected at all costs, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, which is very much a liberal thing, which is just as irrational as the idea that our culture is superior and we have to impose
it. I know. Where, what happened to the liberals that were fighting to get out of suppressive cultures? They were, it was called counterculture. Whatever happened to that?
It's the
now
same.
They, you know, they can't be counterculture if you're going to be, you know, relativistic.
So you have to come back to the fundamental issue once again, egalitarianism, equality of all cultures. All cultures are equally, inalienable, whatever, versus this sort of,
however, all cultures are equal, but some cultures are more equal than others.
Versus this religious supremacism and militarism, which obviously we are not on either of these sides.
Yeah.
Insofar as we have to choose a side, we are on the side of change, if you want. We want change.
We want change.
No, we want things to stay the same. We want change.
Whatever that means.
Only because it only because it deconstructs the religious order of things. Only because it deconstructs the belief systems that exist. Well, all it's really doing is replacing one belief system.
Faces change.
So we have to go to the intermission.
Okay, well, I thought this time I'd recycle something because we were going to talk about it a little bit as far as culture war goes, and I dragged out a civil discussion again so you guys could hear it and
yes.
Think about it as
it
relates to our discussion.
We should definitely come back to that when we come back to civil discussion this time. An interesting part of this doesn't quite fit in what we're talking about right now, but it's definitely part of it.
I just wanted to make sure everyone was refreshed on it, because it's been a little while.
So we'll be right back.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
A civil discussion. Have a seat. Would you like some coffee, tea? I ask you here today to discuss the fact that you deserve to be beaten, tortured, and humiliated. Your thoughts are crimes worthy of sexual humiliation and agonizing pain for as long as the torturers can keep it up. In fact, it's not just your thoughts, it's what your ancestors thought. Don't blame me, that's just how it is. It's not my fault, you see, because by thinking those thoughts, you have chosen to be branded with hot metal and repeatedly, brutally sodomized. You have said, through your thoughts and actions, that you want to be chained down on a splintery rack, stretched and shat upon by rabid livestock, while buzzards peck out your eyes. You said, "Hey, mister, would you mind putting me in an episode of Twilight Zone where I slowly go into a psychological horror, despair, and despondency, never to receive comfort from another human being? That would be great." Hey, that was you talking, not me. But you can take it all back. You can escape from your shame. All you have to do is agree with me, and your unforgivable thought crimes will be erased. Admit that your thoughts are vile, and that you are vile, and that you deserve to sit in a hot tub full of feces and vomit and handed a large spoon, and you will escape the fate of someone peeling your skin off and forcing you into an iodine and lime juice shower. But the best part of all this, if you admit you deserve to slide down a giant razor blade into a pond full of piranha and Amazon urethra fish, you will be able to hang out with me. Isn't that great? What good news that is. Now, aren't you glad we could have this talk? If more people realized that people as different as we can have a civil exchange of ideas, we wouldn't be having these problems. I just wish that the other people, the ones like you, weren't so unreasonably hostile. Thanks for listening. To hear more, visit me at hellboundalley.com. That's A-double-L-triple-E.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
And here we are.
Okay, so...
civil discussion is interesting, and I think it was very popular because
It shows us as victims.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why atheists love it so much, because it shows them as the victims. I agree. I agree to a certain extent.
That wasn't my intention, but, I realized it after a while. I don't mean to say I'm some kind of victim, but what I'm trying to say is talking about tolerance.
People love to be victims. We know that from politics.
Yeah. I mean, my point was more about people who demand tolerance while at the same time don't have any intention of being tolerant. It's basically, you can't really be tolerant at all. I mean, if you're going to follow a religion like that.
Exactly. We have to understand that both sides are hypocrites. The only one who aren't hypocrites is us, basically, because we're individualists. But religious people claim to be, exactly, they try to appeal to the culture by saying that they're being victimized when they're the ones who claim that everyone is condemned to eternal torture.
Well, in a very real sense, you talk to them and they say, wow, I can't believe how civil you're being. Well, because you guys are...
Well, on the other hand, you have the liberals, the moderns, who claim to be completely tolerant, while they believe in the supremacy of culture, and they want to subject the individual to his culture.
Yeah.
Which is not quite as horrible as hell.
It's very interesting. I wanted to point out a couple of emails I got where, people are writing in against for moral relativism. It's really disturbing to them what we're saying about moral realism. And they tend to say morality is relative, but this is how you guys should act, and I don't like the way you guys are acting. You should be doing this and that. Which is interesting, because if I wanted to be an asshole, I could just write back and say, but it's my culture. Like, don't act like that.
Exactly.
If you're a moral relativist, who are you to tell me what I should and should not do? For a moral relativist,
exactly,
you're doing an awful lot of finger wagging.
Exactly.
Which is
doing a lot of judging from what standard?
It's, we talk a lot about borrowing concepts, I mean, the Christians, the ones that say that they should be for tolerance are borrowing a concept of that people should be tolerant while condemning people to hell.
Exactly. But there's nothing about tolerance in the Bible.
And the relativists are...
In fact, it's intolerant.
The relativists are assuming Christianity means both moral objectivism and moral absolutism, and confusing the two, thinking somehow that Christianity is morally objective,
which it isn't,
which is completely subjective. And I know they're saying that because I read one guy said, okay, so Christianity is morally objective because they say all morals come from this one guy, which is why we don't like to use the terms objective, because nobody understands
them. Which is exactly the same as the relativist who claims that he just makes up all of his morality.
Right.
It's exactly the same thing. It doesn't matter if it comes from God or Joe Blow.
I don't want to get too much into relativism
when
we're talking about the culture wars, but I'm just saying that they both end up wagging their fingers at us an awful lot, so...
Definitely.
Well, the Christian, they like to escape any kind of personal responsibility for their belief by saying, well, hey, it's not my fault, like I said in the recording, it's not my fault that you're going to hell, you're sending yourself there. And not having any possible ability to relate that to a real world situation. Like, they're saying that I have a choice. That people have a choice to go to hell or not,
Yeah, I'll just throw myself to hell now.
Yeah, it's almost like they're just projecting their own self-invented problem onto you so that they feel, so they can justify administering the cure, so to speak, but it's so absurd to think that they can just sit there and declare that everyone has this built-in guilt that they're automatically condemned and that they all need their particular tonic or medicine to make themselves morally correct. Yeah.
It's just like an easy way to look benevolent, because instead of condemning you to hell, you know, they're helping you. They're trying to protect you.
Anyway.
That's what they think they're doing, but they also love to use it as a threat. They'll use it either as a plea or a threat whenever they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever it suits their purpose. They'll either appeal to you with it, but you're in danger of hell and I want to help you, or they'll threaten you with it, you know. You're going to go to hell, so you have to do what I'm saying.
And I'll be laughing up in heaven.
Yeah, and I'll be laughing up in heaven. Hank's going to kick the shit out of you, and I'm going to be laughing my ass off counting my money.
Hank. But again, you know, it's not just Christians that can do that, though, you know, because you like liberals and relativists are also protecting you, they think, from a society that, you know,
evil capitalist
that evil enforces individual. You know, individualism or whatever it is they think that can happen.
So, yes, and both are anti-science and pro-state to a certain extent. And I think there's a lot of talk from the liberal side, from the modernist side, about how religion and conservatives are anti-science and that sort of thing.
Well, in order to protect freedom, they think we have... Separating morality from reality supposedly protects freedom by allowing people to be crackpots when, you know, it's like, there's no such thing as allowing people to be crackpots. People will be crackpots no matter what is real and what is not. You know, obviously, I'm not sure where the fear exactly comes from. Like, if you're demanding realism in all parts of your life, that somehow that means that we're under some kind of totalitarian law all of a sudden.
I don't, that's not really what I'm talking about.
What were you talking about then?
I'm just talking about how both sides are anti-science to a certain extent.
Definitely.
And anti-individualist to a certain extent.
Well, I was just kind of pointing out that it is anti-science to separate, you know, morality from science that way, or reality.
Not really. I'm not following you.
That comes from your own words, by the way.
Yeah, but I'm trying not to make this too technical.
Okay.
Definitely there are many, I don't think that there's really a desire to support science on the part of pretty much anyone.
Well, if you're going to be postmodern, obviously it's right. Against anti-science, because science comes from men who are have some sort of other agenda about controlling people, right?
Hmm.
And because facts are facts, that there's no way to get away from them, it's some sort of lack of freedom that's very scary.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the liberals, for example, are definitely anti-science insofar as economics, insofar as GM food and genetic engineering and all that sort of stuff. I'm not sure what you qualify that as.
What?
Genetics, biology.
Hippies?
Biotech.
They are also very much against, economics and biology, basically. They also are very much into fatalism, saying that, you know, it's society's fault.
Yeah, it's two different factions that both have an apocalypse.
Yeah. True. There's also the greenie religion, which is a big part of it, I would say, part of modernity.
Because on one side, we're killing ourselves with science. On the other side, we're killing ourselves with sin.
Exactly.
You know, it's really very, very similar when you think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, science and sin is kind of the same thing. I mean, as far as greenies go, the science, the technology is sin.
Right.
And, of course, there's plenty of Christians that are greenies, too, so...
True.
So as far as the culture wars go, like I said, it goes back to this idea of which faction is going to be able to tell us what to do.
Hmm.
Basically, yes. I think that's the basic idea. I think if you look at some instances of this, for example, public schools, if you look at public schools, the traditionalist faction wants to put religion in schools and creationism in schools, while the modernist faction wants to...
revisionist history and...
doesn't want these things. They both want to control public schools. They both want to control what our children learn. They want to teach their relativist values, both of them.
Yeah.
If you look at... So, as I said, you know, I'm not... Like I said, I only support modernity, modern values, insofar as they help deconstruct religious belief and religious institutions and religious thought. But in the end, they're both undesirable because they are anti-individualist.
Yeah.
They are both relativist. Being relativist is anti-individualism. Because being a relativist means you can't figure it out for yourself. You can't look at the facts.
Right, nobody has the right to determine truth, really.
Exactly. Being a relativist is like anti-science, too, even on a moral level.
Yes, I think if you look at it at an epistemic level, science says, you know, we can find the truth. We can use our empirical data and we can experiment and find the truth. And relativists say you can't. Even if they might not admit it, you know, it is a very anti-scientific attitude.
It's either you can't or how dare you have the audacity to try.
I think you look at the media. That's another area. You've got censorship areas. And in this regard, once again, I think censorship is supported on both sides, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Except the only difference is that from the religious side, censorship is used to suppress competing beliefs, obscenity, basically anything that offends them.
But farther than censorship, you know, the other side is more successful in that they can actually ban activities altogether, like how they banned foie gras in Chicago.
How they banned what?
They banned foie gras in Chicago, Aaron.
Why?
Because they think it's an animal rights issue. You see, foie gras is made with the free-range geese, which after a while end up being force-fed so that their liver is really fatty and that makes them tastier.
I'm talking more about the media specifically.
Uh-huh.
I think from the modernist side, what we have a lot of propaganda, like you were saying, greeny propaganda, pro-democracy propaganda. But I guess both sides are pro-democracy, more or less.
Well, it's all they've got. In order to make their sides think that they have some kind of power over what's going on, I mean, if you lie to them and tell them that your votes are going to actually be how we decide what we're going to do. for some strange reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, in modern societies, we still have censorship.
We want people to think that their values are being affected somehow.
Because we want to do our own thing, they don't want to see us do that because then they think their values are being affected.
It's a real
good
way of passing the buck.
Even though we're not making them do it, like, if you don't like abortion, don't have one, you know?
It's a real good way of passing the buck, though, I'm saying, because you can say, well, either you didn't vote, so you can't complain, or you voted for it, so this is what we're going to do, you know? It was the will of the people. So because democracy is good, that means that what we're doing is good, no matter what, how you feel about it.
Hmm.
And so it's easier to make the people of the United States hate each other than blame any kind of government system, because now it's the fault of the red states. It's the fault of the Midwesterners. It's the fault of the rural people that these things are happening. And George Bush can go ahead and the complaining goes up to him, and at this point, George Bush is passing the buck to God, because now he's saying on the news, I'm sure people have heard, that his decisions are being made because God told him to. So really, nobody's responsible for anything.
Because everyone's owned by God anyway.
It's those other people, it's the president, it's God.
So why do we care if we're not really, if they're both, factions, if you want?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really as clearly defined as that, but there are definitely people on one side and people on the other. I think we all have an idea of who they are. Why do we care that much? Well, we're individualists. And we are forced to take sides because these are moral issues.
Mm-hmm.
These are people trying to decide how we're going to live, fighting over how we're going to live.
Mm.
These are people who promote all sorts of beliefs and ideas which are completely false and relativist.
And they're trying to be coercive, too.
Yeah.
And they're trying to limit, they're definitely denying our right of self-determination.
Exactly.
They don't want us to do anything that, even if it doesn't have anything to do with them.
So it is really a culture war in that it has nothing to do with individual values. It's really just about culture. It's a very collectivist war. But this war is being waged in America, in Europe, you know, in the great part of the world. We have this going on.
It is kind of easier to blame culture for things, though, because it takes the hook off of you for actually having to point to anybody. It's like, well, it's the culture.
And what really worries me in that is that when the Muslim wave or another religious wave starts hitting in Canada, for example, because we're in Canada, the U.S. has already lost, I don't know, the U.S. is still fighting, is still very much fighting this war. I don't know which side it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Canada is at war, technically, too, with the Afghanistan. So.
No, what I'm saying is the culture war.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where it's going to go in the U.S. It's very difficult to figure out, but...
I think we're winning.
Hmm. Yeah, on certain aspects, definitely. On other aspects, such as the political aspect, it's not going very well. But, either way, what I'm worried about is that my society, for example, taken over by relativist beliefs, would be a perfect prey for a new religious way, be it Islamist or whatever, Christianity, if we start getting a Christian invasion,
the Christians are coming.
Yeah. No, really, but yeah, we would be very vulnerable, I think, in Canada.
Really?
That sort of thing. And
yeah, it is kind of wide open for that, isn't it? Because it's not, people are specifically atheist here, they're just...
Exactly.
They don't give a crap.
So,
but pretty soon, we might have to give a crap. We won't have a choice.
I think one important step would be to not have a government, to have a market anarchist system. However, that would not be enough. People need to realize that tolerance and intolerance are just part of two sides of the same coin. They need to realize that both are not desirable if we are to live in a society which is really, which changes at speeds that we've never seen before. I don't know if you understand what I mean.
I think so. Well, because of the fact that our technology and social progress is progressing at faster and faster rates, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think that either way, we either would be extremely undesirable, but in order to be protected, you see what's happening in Europe with more centrist, moderate countries getting invaded by religious force. They are having a very hard time. France, the Netherlands, all these areas are having a very hard time dealing with it. Some of them are reverting to a form of religious extremism, which is not really religious, but just your standard supremacist.
I think they figured out pretty quick that they can't be loose like they used to be, as far as being protectionist, like
exactly
like the video that you have to watch to get into Holland.
So they are reverting to a religious attitude, but without religion. But like
right.
I said, I think the basic battle is between egalitarianism and supremacism. They're just reverting to supremacism. So it's kind of one kind of leads to the other.
Hmm.
It's like they're actually both.
They go hand in hand a lot too. I mean.
Oh, the show's over. I didn't even have the time to talk about the people, how to talk to people.
Oh.
Lack of information. What I think really quickly is that people lack information. I think that if you can give information to people that there are alternatives, individualist alternatives out there, they will listen to you. Just my experience, my thought on that. But we have to go now.
I didn't even mention in the first half of the show that our website is hellboundalley.com. And you can email us about this or moral relativism or anything else at ally@hellboundalley.com and come by hellboundalley.blogspot.com to see a new post about moral relativism by our friend Seth from Whiskey Before Breakfast podcast.
And next week we'll have a two-parter. We'll have Ray Comfort of...
Way of the Master.
And
the banana argument. See you next week.